Commonwealth v. Gator. Ms. Kiernan, do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yes, Your Honor. 3 minutes, if I could.
3 minutes is fine. You may begin when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. Again, this is Elizabeth Kiernan, and I represent the Commonwealth in this appeal. I'd actually like to go in the reverse order of our brief and address the reasonable suspicion issue first. Assuming the defendant in this case was seized for the sake of argument, her detention was supported by reasonable suspicion of criminal activity, and for that reason, the detectives were justified in using a narcotics dog to quickly confirm or dispel that suspicion. Here we have a veteran narcotics officer with more than 2 years' experience who received a tip from a concerned citizen that a woman with orange-tipped dreadlocks was engaged in narcotics distribution centered around a two-toned SUV in a particular parking lot of a grocery store or food market. When the detective went to the scene, he recognized the place as a place that he had personally engaged in at least, I believe it was 2 or 3 undercover drug deals, and he also saw a woman who matched the defendant's description in the car.
I think we're familiar with the facts. Could you maybe focus in on the legal argument for us a little bit, please?
Yes, sir. So the tip that the officer had in this case was that we had a person engaging in narcotics activity. In light of this tip, his personal experience in this area, and the activity he observed over a period of an hour and a half, this detective did have reasonable suspicion to believe that the defendant was involved in criminal activity.
Would you agree that the tip alone was insufficient to warrant a seizure?
Yes, I would, Your Honor. However, in this case, we do have significantly more than that tip standing alone, and we also have more than just corroboration of the innocent details of that tip, of the person's experience. And for this reason, this case is not similar to the JL United States Supreme Court case cited by the defendant. Here, we had the officer observe the defendant for a period of an hour and a half, and he observed what he believed in his training experience to be hand-to-hand transactions. Although he did not observe physical drugs passing from one party to the other, he saw multiple people, I believe it was 5, come and meet with this defendant and leave immediately after meeting with her without going into the grocery store at all. He testified this activity was consistent with his experience in this location, and based on this observation of what he believed to be distribution activity combined with that tip and combined again with his training experience in that location, the totality of the circumstances in this case would support reasonable suspicion, if not even probable cause, that this person was engaged in narcotics distribution. And armed with this reasonable suspicion, it was perfectly reasonable for the officer to approach the defendant and use the drug dog, which was already present in the parking lot, to quickly confirm or dispel his suspicion that the defendant was engaged in narcotics activity. Again, once the narcotics dog alerted, the defendant, or the officers rather, had probable cause to search the vehicle and the defendant's incriminating statements.
Assuming that the officer didn't have reasonable suspicion at the time the defendant approached the car and he made mention of the drug dog, wouldn't Middlebrook control the outcome?
Your Honor, the Commonwealth's position is that Middlebrook is distinguishable. They are close facts. We do have a drug dog the statement that a drug dog is coming in both of those circumstances. However, the case that we have here, the dog was already in the parking lot with the officer when he told the defendant the dog was going to run his car. We also have in this case a defendant who was freely moving about the parking lot. She wasn't in the car or asked to get out of the car. When the officers made that statement to her, the officers didn't have her ID.
But it wasn't the presence of the dog in Middlebrook that constituted the seizure. It was the statement, "I just want to let you know I'm going to call the drug dog," that we decided was sufficient such that no reasonable person would feel free to leave. So I really don't understand the distinction there.
Yes, Your Honor, and that statement was also considered, with the totality of the circumstances in that case. And in that case, I do believe that there are some distinguishing factors. That happened in the middle of the night. The defendant was in the parking lot of a McDonald's that was closed, other than the drive-through. Here we have someone in the middle of the day in the parking lot of an open retail establishment. The car is not in a place where where it couldn't have been left. I think that the statement that the officer was going to call a drug dog is certainly significant in the court's analysis, and I understand that. However, looking at the totality of the two circumstances here, the Commonwealth's position is that they are distinguishable and that a reasonable person in this case would have felt free to leave, given that it was in the middle of the day, and she had been freely walking about in the parking lot, unlike the defendant in Middlebrooks, who was in his vehicle and asked to be step out of the vehicle and then wait for the dog to come. In that case, of course, he made incriminating statements before that could be brought to fruition. But
yeah, let me ask you about that too, because I want to ask both parties about this. Was anything incriminating said or found between the time the officer said, "I'm going to run the dog," and the time the dog alerted on possible drugs in the car?
No, Your Honor, it's my understanding that there were no statements made during that time frame.
So if it was a seizure, there was no search or no request for consent until after the drug dog alerted. Is that your reading of the facts?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks.
And my understanding is that after the dog alerted, the defendant was asked for access to the vehicle. She provided keys, and at that time also informed the officers that there were, I believe it was oxycodone, but there's contraband in the vehicle, and made other incriminating statements regarding her buying and selling of that contraband. But all of that, I believe, occurred after the dog sniff and after access to the car, in this case, which is all consistent with a valid Terry stop. Again, we have reasonable suspicion to approach, assuming that she was seized. That seizure was short in duration. It was calculated to briefly, confirm or dispel suspicion. And to the extent that the defendant is now analogizing this case to Rodriguez, we have a completely different situation here in which the defendant was stopped on suspicion of criminal activity. It wasn't a traffic stop that ended and then converted into a narcotics investigation. The use of the dog here is calculated to confirm or dispel the same suspicion that justified the stop in the first place. So having the dog there and having the dog run doesn't need additional justification outside of what would have been required to detain her in the first place.
Let me ask you back to your... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, go ahead, Judge Patty.
No, good. I've asked plenty. You chime in.
No. I had one question, Ms. Kinney. I was going to ask if you could address the reasonable expectation of privacy issue.
Yes, Your Honor. The Commonwealth's position is that the defendant has not established a reasonable expectation of privacy in the vehicle. The Commonwealth raised this issue on brief in this matter and also in closing argument to the trial court. It's the defendant's burden, as the court knows, to come forward with evidence that she has a reasonable expectation of privacy in the vehicle. The fact that she had keys in her possession or that she had access to the vehicle is not sufficient.
Why aren't the officer's observations as well as the information provided by the anonymous tipster sufficient to establish that it was her car? At
Your
least
Honor,
in the sense she had possession of the car, and there's no question about it being unlawful possession or any type of rental vehicle.
Well, Your Honor, the Commonwealth's evidence establishes only that she was seen in and about the vehicle by the officers, and that the tip that the officers received, which is, on appendix page 20, that there was narcotics distribution centered around the vehicle, that the seller was this woman with the two-tone dreadlocks. There's no indication that it was her vehicle, simply because she had accessed that vehicle as it sat in a public parking lot. She was never seen driving the vehicle. She never approved, and it's her burden of persuasion and production to come forward that either she's the owner or she's in lawful possession. And
suppose we agree with that argument, and we reverse and remand based on lack of standing, what would prevent the defendant from asking the court to reopen the motion to suppress and then simply introducing evidence of standing. Hello?
Yes, sorry, Your Honor, I'm thinking.
I lost you for a minute. I mean, we might actually decide a case, but not decide it. It would be back before us on the real issues here.
Sure, I understand. And I would just argue that the trial court, I guess, would have discretion in whether or not to relitigate that issue. Both parties in this case have already had that opportunity, and the defendant failed to meet it. It's my understanding that the court would have discretion to reconsider the issue prior to trial, although to the extent any factual findings have been made.
You are now in your rebuttal. You may continue if you wish or reserve the remainder.
I'll reserve unless I can answer any questions for the court at this time. Thank you, Your Honors.
All right.
Thank you.
Ms. Dalton.
Yes, if I could first address the issue of reasonable...
Ms. Dalton, are you on speakerphone?
Yes.
Would you mind picking up the handset? We've found that speakerphones don't work a lot.
Certainly.
A lot of times. Thank you very much.
Can the court hear me better now?
That's fine. Thank you.
Okay. If the court has no preference, I will address the reasonable articulable suspicion issue first.
Let me ask one question first.
Sure.
Do we all agree that the only issue in this case is whether the defendant was lawfully seized at the time the search of the car occurred? We don't have any issue about the consent, if it was consent, or why the car was searched.
Yes, I think the only issue for this court really to decide with respect to that is whether she was seized at the moment of the officer's statement about the drug dog, and then I guess if it's supported by reasonable articulable suspicion.
All right, thank you.
With respect to the reasonable articulable suspicion, it is our position the same as the Commonwealth that the tip itself is not enough. The tip is from an anonymous source. The tipster does not provide the basis for knowing the information or why they suspected what they reported to be drug distribution, and the tip is not detailed in its report of criminal activity.
If the tip were adequately corroborated, would it be sufficient to warrant a reasonable suspicion?
Yes, if the tip was adequately corroborated, it's our position that it was not. The officer's observation during, I guess, the observation period where he's attempting to corroborate the tip, he saw no drugs, he saw no drug paraphernalia, no money exchange, no hand
exchange. But that would be probable cause. We're only dealing with reasonable suspicion. And we're not dealing with evidence that independently is reasonable suspicion. We're only talking about, is there sufficient corroboration of the tip?
Right, and I think that still only gets us to reasonable articulable suspicion. I think the tip itself could provided it. In theory, the officer's observation itself could have provided it in theory. Because there's both in this case, I think we need to look at both to see whether together they provide reasonable articulable suspicion. The officer's observation also does not, because of what he observed, and in particular because of the police's action in stopping one of the cars that they see interact with Gators, and then that dispels any suspicion the Gators had sold drugs to the person who turned out to her brother. Because they did a traffic stop and a drug dog run of that vehicle.
Now, that's not really in the record, is it? I mean, the only thing I saw was the officer testified. He didn't know what happened with the car. He just assumed that because there was no arrest, nothing was found.
I believe it was in cross-examination by defense counsel where he specifically asked on page 33 of the joint appendix, and the officer says, turned out one was her brother, I believe, some relative. I don't remember the exact relationship. Did you find any narcotics in that car? I don't know. I didn't search it. So you wouldn't know if Officer Milton or Officer Neal found anything? I don't know. I don't believe they did. They didn't arrest anybody for it.
Yeah, that's just an assumption on his part.
Yes, and I would just suggest, given that Gators prevailed at the motion to suppress, that those facts should be viewed in the light most favorable to her.
What about the officer's testimony that was not objected to? That and I don't have the exact page site because I'm looking at the transcript, not the appendix. The appendix didn't come through real well. But he testified that he was asked, were the transactions that he saw consistent with the interactions you'd observed in a controlled buy? And he said, yes, they were consistent with that. And then again, he said, without objection, so based on your experience and your training as an officer, did you believe those interactions to be? And he said, narcotic transactions, interactions. I mean, isn't that a pretty solid statement that's what those were?
I agree with Your Honor that was Officer Neufeld's testimony. However, I would like to point out that he's basing that on his testimony, which is on Joint Appendix 18 through 20, about his prior surveillance and, I guess, the police knowledge of this being a drug trafficking area. And what he said with respect to their prior observations or knowledge of that area is that typically, Neufeld testified that the narcotics operations that he participated in consisted of an informant approaching someone in the parking lot, and then that person would take them into a vehicle. And when they entered the vehicle, the drug transaction was conducted with a different individual inside of the vehicle. And the
but if you cut through the cop speak in this question and answer, basically what he's saying is that, in my opinion, based on my training and experience, these were drug transactions. Now, that might be objectionable in that there was not a sufficient foundation to allow that testimony, but there was no objection.
Right, there was no objection, and I just did find it in the transcript. I think it's on the transcript 49 and the Joint Appendix 23. He says, he's asked, the interactions you saw, they were consistent with interactions you observed before, and he says they were consistent. But his testimony as to what their observation before their controlled buys actually is different than the facts that he observes. So I understand the court's position that is in evidence without objection. But if you actually compare the facts of what he observed to what they had seen in prior drug transactions, they're very different. In that no one enters the vehicle, no one enters, other than Ms. Gators, no one coming into the parking lot enters the vehicle, and there's not alleged to be another individual in the vehicle waiting to do some sort of drug transaction. But our argument that there's no reasonable articulable suspicion is based primarily on the limited things that the officer did actually observe, specifically that he did not witness any hand-to-hand transactions or any sort of exchange of any kind. If the court wishes me to object the seizure issue next.
And I agree with you that Middlebrooks is pretty close on point, if not exactly on point. But the question I have from Middlebrooks, as well as just from general search and seizure laws, my understanding that assume that she was seized when the officer made the comment about the drug dog.
Right.
There was no incriminating evidence found between that time and the point at which the dog alerted on the car. So
right.
why do we have to worry about that, whether or not that was a seizure? When she gave him the keys, the officer clearly had probable cause to search the vehicle.
Based on the drug dog sniff, because it's our position that they would not have been able to do the drug dog sniff had they not seized Gators, because the vehicle would no longer have been there.
Well, that's a bit of a stretch, isn't it? Because the vehicle wasn't going anywhere. And I'm saying I'll agree with you that she was seized when he made the drug dog comment.
Mm-hmm.
But my question, and I found this comment in Middlebrooks that I found similar. We said we need not resolve whether Officer DiOrio seized Middlebrooks when he asked Middlebrooks to step out of his vehicle because no evidence was obtained at that time.
Right.
However, it is clear when he made the comment about the drug dog, then he was seized. And that's kind of my analysis here. We've got an unlawful seizure, but we have no search.
Well, I think that but I don't understand how the court could have decided Middlebrooks the way that they did, because I don't see a factual distinction between nothing else happening in Middlebrooks.
Well, in Middlebrooks, he was ordered out of the car,
right?
And then he was told that a drug dog was on the way, and that's when he consented to the search.
Okay. So
and the court said, we don't have to worry about whether ordering him out of the car constituted an illegal seizure because there was no incriminating evidence found at that time.
Right.
And that's what we kind of have here.
And I guess in Middlebrooks they invalidated the consent, and although there is some sort of consent in this case, there's also the drug dog intervening action prior to the consent. I would just rely on my position that but for the seizure of Gators, everything flowing from it, including their ability to access the car, there wouldn't have been a drug dog sniff of the vehicle.
Right.
To address the issue of standing, whether Gators demonstrated a reasonable expectation of privacy, again, we take the position that the Commonwealth actually waived the issue of standing. And although it was addressed in the written response to the motion, the Commonwealth then did not make an objection at the beginning of the motion hearing when the issue of standing really should have been resolved first and said accepted.
Why does the Commonwealth have to raise the issue? Isn't it incumbent upon the defendant to establish affirmatively that she has standing?
I think as a matter of practice, if no challenge to standing is made, then the court proceeds on the motion, and that if the Commonwealth, or at a minimum, that the defendant would need to present evidence first, but the Commonwealth, by accepting the burden of calling Officer Neufeld as the witness, then waived the issue of standing that it had, if this
but
court...
But clearly, the Commonwealth clearly raised the issue in its argument at the conclusion of the hearing.
It did, and our argument to that would be that it was not timely made at that point, because it had already been waived and then waited until the conclusion of the evidence to then say, hey, she doesn't have standing to even make this motion.
No, it's unclear whether standing could even have been established.
And if this court does not feel that the Commonwealth has waived the issue of standing, it's our argument that the evidence viewed in the light most favorable to Gators from Officer Neufeld's testimony does establish that she had standing. There's no evidence suggesting that she was not the owner or not in lawful possession. The evidence proved that she's the only person in possession of the vehicle. She's the only person in the car. She had the keys, and most significantly, the officer repeatedly referred to the car as if she was the owner.
The same question I asked Ms. Kiernan, if the court never ruled on the issue of standing, so if we were to conclude that somehow it was an issue, what would we do? Would we just affirm the court, or would we remand it back for the court to make a determination on that issue?
Well, I think to be perfectly candid, this court could do either. However, I would say that the trial court did implicitly make a finding that Gators had standing by granting her motion to suppress, but it was never, I guess,
kind of assumed without deciding.
Right. There was no sort of the trial court never. Trial judge never responded to the Commonwealth raising it in the argument at the end of the motion to suppress. And this court could remand for additional proceedings on the issue of standing in the trial court, I suppose. And unless the court has additional questions.
Nothing for me, thank you.
Okay. We'd ask the court to affirm the trial court's granting of the motion to suppress.
Thank you very much for your argument. Ms. Kiernan, do you still have your rebuttal remaining?
Yes, Your Honor. Briefly to begin on the issue of whether the court decided that the defendant didn't have standing in this case, whether a remand would be appropriate or whether The case should just be reversed. If the court were to remand and allow the defendant to reopen the evidence in this case and put on evidence that she did own the vehicle or that she did, you know, have lawful possession of the vehicle, that same factual scenario could play out in every one of these Commonwealth appeals. In every case, an interlocutory appeal, the court could remand and the defendant could move to reopen the evidence and put on additional evidence to support his position. So in that procedural aspect, the Commonwealth's position would be that, you know, a remand to put on more evidence would be inappropriate. The trial court rejected the Commonwealth's standing argument, and there's no requirement for the court to articulate the basis for doing so. And so the defendant, or the court...
Better be careful with that argument. We have the very case before us where we affirmed a trial court, and the Commonwealth then came back and tried to get another bite at the apple, and now it's back before us.
Is the court referring to the Spinola case?
I can't recall the name of
maybe not.
It was a motion to suppress in the middle of trial, and we ruled it wasn't a pretrial motion.
Yeah.
So the Commonwealth came back and asked the court to revisit it.
Yes, Your Honor. I believe in that case, though, although this is you'll hear from my colleague, Ms. Johnson, on that issue in the future, I would distinguish them because in that case, there was a motion to reincorporate the prior rulings, and I think the Commonwealth's position will be in that case that, reconsidering it in the middle of trial was improper, but luckily we don't have that situation in this case.
You're running out of your time. I ate up a little bit of it. If you want to bring it to conclusion, please.
Yes, Your Honor. I will just conclude briefly, unless there are further questions, by saying the trial court in this case erred in finding that the officers did not have reasonable suspicion, regardless of the issue of seizure, regardless of the issue of standing. The officers' actions were clearly supported by reasonable suspicion of criminal activity, and for that reason alone, the court should reverse the trial court's ruling. Thank you.
Thank you very much. The matter is submitted. We will adjourn and reconvene in conference. Thank you both for your briefing and for your argument.
Thank you.